Okay. All right. I got to start this so I can actually know where to cut off and begin where the podcast. So thank you so much for joining Pod Mavericks Mavs Party a little bit later than I wanted. And of course, it just looks like I don't know what I'm doing here. And my son just attempted to interrupt the show here. Thank you so much for joining the show. If you are at all confused on how this thing is supposed to work, it is a matter of joining the show here at the bottom. And then we're just going to, there's a link in the YouTube comments that's pinned, and you just click into that. And it's, you know, one of those things where we can talk a little hoop. I got my man Brian waiting, Michael waiting. Hopefully somebody else comes back. So we had like six people in here, and that's just the way these shows sort of go. So Brian's going to kick us off, and then we'll see how this goes. Brian, thanks so much. How's it going? What happened at yesterday's presser? Why is everybody saying that? I wasn't able to watch. Like, I've had one of the dumbest work weeks I've had.
What are they talking about in the chat as far as the
press? They were saying that the press conference yesterday got off to a weird start. Is that true?
Well, I know there was, I think Masai's son wanted him to pick him up, and so he was crying off to the side. So there was that, but otherwise, no, it was all right. And then, you know, of course, there was Patrick DeMott doing the weird thing where he tries to interact with people and it doesn't necessarily go all that well and it just ends in awkward applause. So
I like that. That's the best. Shout out to Kevin Gray Sports and anybody else who's like waiting with me. I feel like a total dunce cap. It really just has to be like I got this, my work, and I work for a nonprofit. My work got me in a Victus gaming laptop. This thing is a fucking horse, but when it doesn't work, it does not work at all. And it's very funny because it is a big, heavy. Like, I could play real games on this if I wanted to. They just must have gotten a deal on it or something because it's, you know, nonprofits are silly. But, like, since I've transferred over and I did this about, like, right around Christmas, everything has been weird. And it's just – it has to be purely a browser issue. So I'm grateful for anybody for waiting for me through this, even though that was painful. And now I don't even know how I wanted to kick off the show. Actually, I do know how I wanted to kick off the show here. So if you'll allow me a brief soliloquy, you know, I started the show with Josh the other day and I was a little bit down on the Masai hiring. My friend, Josh McSwag pointed out that I wouldn't be happy with anyone, which I think is a accurate assessment. I listened up to one of the guys on 105.3 kind of go off on a tangent about how like he expected Dumont more or less to come out and say sorry for trading Nico or Luca. And like, that's just not happening. And one of the things I noticed during the press conference, and the thing that just still sort of has me buzzing, has grumpy shit Kirk buzzing, is that Masai Ujiri brought an element of professionalism to this that I didn't know I had been missing. I have gotten so used to the fucking clown show that was Nico Harrison, Patrick Dumont, and quite candidly, Mark Cuban and the Donnie Nelson and everything before. Like, it's just, I'd gotten used to things being a clown car. And what Masai did when he sat down and spoke from that podium, it told me that, like, clown car no more. We're going to get this shit in order. We're going to be a professional business. We're going to get we're going to right the wrongs as best we can, and we'll see what kind of team we can build. So I'm now in a much happier place with Masai, and it's because I didn't know what I was missing. Does that make any sense, Brian?
Yeah, definitely. There was an aura of, or like an air of professionalism just around the entire area, like from the moment that the presser kicked off. He turned the charm on really quickly in a way that, yeah, it was a real charm offensive of a press conference that he, you know, you hate to say, you know, they won the press conference, but he definitely won the press conference. He gave a couple of really great quotes. He had some really thoughtful, respectful answers. He answered some of the, you know, the Luka Doncic trade questions and some of these other things, and he did everything pretty much with aplomb. No, he was awesome. He gave all the answers that we needed to hear. He handled all the questions that came his way with the kind of poise that we were hoping to see. And yeah, I liked the hiring when it was made, and I feel even better about it now after having watched the entire presser live. So, yeah.
Well, and one thing the presser and just the hiring has resulted in is a sense of direction. with what's next. And that is Texas Vegas 3403 says he wanted to bring a sense of calm to the franchise. And I, you know, if anybody's ever worked in a chaotic work environment where you go from, you know, you've like a really shitty manager and then all of a sudden you have an adult, that's what this reminded me of. And yeah. I feel better. Now, that could go away, but it's not going to go away anytime soon. And, you know, when you have Cooper Flagg and you have a general manager that seems to have a vision, and a vision based off of the way basketball actually works, as opposed to, you know, all forwards, well, non-dribbling, non-shooting forwards and the way of Nico Harrison. I find myself in a pretty good spot. And, you know, obviously the draft lottery Sunday, and that could either change or bolster our moods. But with where things are right now, I feel good, and it's nice. And I haven't really felt good outside of, you know, the brief high of Flag winning rookie of the year, and, you know, just the concept of having Flag. But there's just a lot of things that are foreboding on the Mavs horizon, and now it seems like that we can kind of collectively be positive for a while, and that's nice.
Yeah, all of our wins since the lottery have felt fleeting and in the midst of chaos, and this felt like a win that, you know, may promote some stability. Like, if you haven't read the piece that Brent Brooks wrote for Mavs Moneyball that got published today, you should. It was an awesome read. And honest to God, if the hiring can thaw that guy out after how he felt about the team all season long post-trade and get even him to a position of, like, cautious optimism, that I feel like that's a win for everybody, because that's where I feel like I am.
For context, number one, head to MavsMoneyball.com. We have, I think, like, everything that's been put up the last several days has been good stuff. But I'm particularly proud of this Brent piece. And then Jack Bonin wrote basically all of Masai's transactions post-championship. And it's good contextually. Jack was pro the signing of Ujiri, but it adds a level of it's not all through rose-colored glasses. It's like, here's what's happened, and here's why it happened up in Toronto, and that was nice. And Brent, you know, the Brent piece is good because he won't want me to say this, but I don't care. Brent's an older guy. He's past 50. He's seen a lot of Mavs basketball. And I think the certain things have gotten him really high and really low. And he's written some good pieces over the years. And you know, for him to want to turn the page, I think is – sort of emblematic of, if you're a diehard fan, but that's also just really sick of everything, it's the piece that could give you something to look forward to.
Yeah, that's how I view it.
Well, I made you come up here first. What did you want to talk about? Because I started off with my little soliloquy.
I mean, we're kind of in it right now. Like, obviously, we have the draft stuff, we have the lottery coming up, but it's nice to just feel good about the team and all of this.
We had a 2000 message Slack today over what might happen if the Mavericks were to jump up. And when you are in the land of hypotheticals, that's when you know people are in a good mood, because if you can dream about bullshit like we did today, like, you know, what would happen if the Mavs jumped to 3, jumped to 4, then you're looking towards the future in a really fun way. So we're in a good stretch. Like, now's, you know, I said throughout the season, like, now's really the time to lock in as a Mavs fan. But if you're a team building sicko, these next 60 days are where you should have a lot of fun, because we can argue over shit we have absolutely no ability to affect, while talking about all sorts of different players, many of whom who won't be Mavericks next year. Mm-hmm. It's just a nice way to, like, expand your kind of NBA consumption and thinking. And it's a nice time. So I'm looking forward to it.
Oh yeah. For the draft sickos and the trade machine sickos like myself, you see, I've already gotten started reposting screenshots in the Slack. And I haven't posted any on Twitter yet, but trust me, they're coming. Your timeline is not safe for me.
That's right.
I will be getting started, because trades can be made now. We don't have to wait until the playoffs, and we can start right now. Toronto, under Masai Ujiri, had a history of making trades as the playoffs were going with other teams who were already out of the playoffs. So, it, honestly, once he appoints his GM, and I have a good feeling the way things are going, it's probably just going to be Matt Riccardi, or like, I don't know, Riccardi and Finley both. That's the way things seem to be trending. He's probably already had in mind a few people that he wants to have that position, but yeah, he doesn't really seem to, like you said, he's going to evaluate everybody in the organization. Doesn't really seem to have anything against Matt or have anything against the job that Matt has done, sort of as a little temporary caretaker interim, you know? So we'll see how that goes, but I wouldn't be shocked if that's what ends up happening.
He did give us kid haters some real,
oh, yeah,
just some, look, I don't think kid goes anywhere. Just my thought. But like, if you're a person who wants kid out the door, there's enough to be like, this is interesting. Cause like I was he at the press conference? I don't think he was.
He was not. Matt Riccardi was. Jason Kidd was not.
Tim McMahon said this morning that Kidd sort of pushed for the job throughout the season, but I think they made it clear to him that he wasn't a choice early on, which conflicts some earlier stuff that we heard about. So that was kind of interesting to me. Then again, like I'm just going to put this out. I don't mean this in any way insulting to the Mavs media information ecosphere, because number one, I am not a reporter. But right now, I feel like no Maverick sources are tapped into shit. Like none of them. Mark Stein had a piece about how the Mavericks were far away from everything, and then on Sunday, and then they hired a guy the next day. McMahon loves, and again, not insulting, but it's like all the reporting that comes out after someone's hiring is like, oh, this is what's been happening the whole time, and one of two things is happening. Number one, these guys are holding on to this information for God knows what reason, and they sometimes that does happen. Or number two, they didn't know. And I actually kind of like that. I don't like insidery stuff. It's not for me. This is not Watergate. Like, if you won't go on the record with the things that you know, then I'm fine finding out everybody at the same time. It actually makes for it's a little more fun. Like, that was a surprising Monday and then a surprising Tuesday. Then we're here on Wednesday and it's like, oh, this is nice.
I'll say I don't mind it simply on the basis that you find out who else is finding out at the exact same moment as you. Like, when we found out that Jason Kidd learned about this when the announcement was made, that was enough for me. And then, obviously, you know, Masai not directly committing to him, which is the right answer to give in that moment, like whether you're going to keep him or not. But I am of the mind that, well, so Bobby Corrales, he did say on the DLLS show either that day or the next day that Stein may have mentioned something about some motion getting going on.
It's tough because if you're wrong, everybody makes fun of you. And if you're right, no one gives you credit.
Yeah, I think some people did know just a little bit beforehand, but nobody knew and was able to, like, confirm it beforehand.
There's an element. So it's like, as much as Dumont makes us mad for the rest of time, there's some real G's move in silence shit happening with him this last season and a half where he was like, fuck it, firing Nico, fuck it, not telling Jason Kidd. That makes me, if not like him, go, okay. Like, I just think that's interesting.
I appreciate the fact that he very clearly just wants to get the fuck out of the way and let his basketball people do basketball people things. So I can appreciate that at the very least. And speaking of basketball people doing basketball things, I'm prepared to call my shot right now the way I did with Nico, I think at the beginning of last summer. I said he wouldn't see this coming summer, and he was fired by November. I actually said he'd be fired by training.
I remember this.
But it took 11 games to the season.
Yeah.
Jason Kidd won't make it to the All-Star break.
He's going to find me at, like, Summer League and beat the shit out of me.
Look, you can direct
me. He absolutely knows who I am. The look he gave me was so – this – like, number one, I'm a little taller than him, which was shocking to me. But like this, and he has that old man, fuck you strength going on. Like, Kidd isn't somebody I would not ever trifle with. And, somebody within the Mavs organization was like, why do you hate him so much? And I was like, I don't, but I will tell you, he has been a part of my life since I was like 8 and I am 42. I just need less. And I don't think that's an unreasonable thing to ask. So,
yeah.
Well, hey, man, you got anything else? We somehow have a packed crowd, even though I fucked up the beginning of the show really badly.
Hey, look, people are happy. People want to talk. I just, look, I'm excited for the lottery. I can't wait for us to get this mock draft off the ground.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Come back tomorrow night, everybody. We're gonna do a live mock draft. I don't know. We don't even know how we're going to do it, but it's going to be fun.
We're going to do what we can. We're going to pick and talk about some of these young guys. And, yeah, I'm excited to have an idea of what kind of direction we're going to be headed in. Have, like, a real feel for who we might be taking. And so we have a bit more of an idea of what we're going to be doing in this mock draft. And we can be a bit more predictive as opposed to just throwing out guys that we like.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, we have reason to be excited. That's cool. Everybody's happy. That makes me happy.
Yes, sir. Well, thanks for hanging out, bud.
Hell yeah, dude. Go Mass.
All right. Talk to you soon. Okay, coming up next is Michael. And remember, guys, if you want to join the show, there's a link at the top of the YouTube thing. You can join it from your phone. You don't have to show your face. You can show your face. All sorts of different options here. I want to hear from you guys because, honestly, I hear my own voice enough, and I'm tired of my bullshit. Michael, what's going on?
Hey, Kirk, can you hear me?
I can. Thank you so much for joining. Thank you for waiting through my technical difficulties.
Yeah, no problem. Excellent, excellent podcasting over here. No, I love it. Kirk, honestly, I'm just like you, you know. So I'll be honest, whenever the news came out, I really wasn't that happy to have Masai. You know, I'm old enough to remember, you know, a lot of those really bad moves that happened towards the end of his tenure in Toronto. And like, people don't remember how bad those moves were. Like, they were really bad moves. But, you know, I think watching that presser, I mean, I did a complete 180 on him. Like, and it is exactly what you said. You know, I'm used to this, frankly, this organization being pretty much a shit show, like being ran like a small family business. And like, for the first time, I see somebody showing, you know, class, leadership, you know, strength. I don't know what it was, but I was just, you know, it was something that I felt like I could trust him.
There's a command presence going on here. And I hate to use this, but it's like, not anymore. Certainly not in America now, but politicians used to be good at that sort of thing, like going into the room and like being the guy. But now we have such access to everybody where everybody has a podcast and you kind of know everybody's deal. But like, that dude walks into the room in a power suit. He's he looks the part, be the part. And this looks like a leader of men. And I hate to be that reductive to it, but he has quite a track record. He answered difficult questions in a way that I found interesting, particularly the part about Luka Doncic, whether he would have traded him or not. That's a question that I don't necessarily think should have been asked, but that's neither here nor there. He answered it in such a way where he deflected and wanted to talk about Cooper, but then later on mentioned Luka as one of the best players in the league that they have to go through. So the answer to that question is obvious in that, no, he wouldn't have traded him. It's a pointless question.
Yeah, I saw somebody get mad about that, and I was like, you know what? Like, some people are just never going to be satisfied with whatever answer he gives, and that's okay. But you know, I think what it is for me is just I feel like there's like, yeah, exactly what you said, like command. You know, we're not too far removed of, you know, rumors going around about the Mavs where people didn't even know who was in charge. You know, when Haralabob Valgeras was behind the scenes, you know, that was the kind of stuff happening with this organization where it was just complete disarray. And like, that's the way we were, you know, and that's the way other GMs saw us. So, you know, to have this kind of a strong, you know, presence with direction, I really liked it. Now, the one thing I wanted to ask you is how you think this is going to affect the draft, because, you know, it's funny. I follow Mavs highlights, a really good follow. And, you know, he's been posting a lot of mocks, and, I follow a lot of these mocks we post, and it seems like a lot of people are kind of expecting everything. You know, I even saw CBS Sports. I follow their mock today, and they mocked us taking Yaxel Lendeborg at 8.
That was I'm just like, what planet are we on? He is 4.5 years older than Cooper Flagg. He is a rookie contract older than Cooper Flagg. That's not happening.
Yeah, well, that's the thing too. Is I this is obviously coming from like what they perceive to be Masai's preference, which. I mean, I get it. He has a track record of, you know, liking these like 6'9" rangy kind of wings. Like he really likes these guys. But I'm curious on how you think this is going to affect the draft. Like for me, I really had some guys penciled in. I remember last time on I came on, I talked about really liking Braden Burries for just, you know, sure, the two-way capability, the physicality, NBA ready. And I felt like he had some upside. Now I really feel strongly about that. But how do you feel like a Masai's presence is kind of going to impact decision-making, you know, based on the kind of archetypes we've seen him prefer, defense, physicality, length, that sort of thing?
So I think some of this really comes down to lottery. So if they were to jump in the lottery, which it's a low chance, but it's a statistically significant chance that they were to hop into the top four, that changes the answer to this question quite a bit. Let's say they stay at eight, which doesn't seem very likely. And the bigger likelihood is that they slide to nine. Like that's unfortunately, that's just kind of the likelihood of the biggest odd set. I like a lot of guys at nine. I think the combine measurements also happening on Sunday could change some things. Certain dudes will self-select out if their combine measurements aren't the right way. Like there's three guards right now I would be thrilled with at nine, and really even four if you include Burries, where it's Mikael Brown, Wagler, and then the young man down at Houston,
Flemings.
I would be happy with any of these guys, honestly. But if one of them comes in at 6'2 with a 6'2 wingspan, it's like Dennis Smith times two, that person's not going to get picked by the Mavericks. Because I do think that there's a athleticism and size element that comes into Masai's history that plays a part. Also, and I said this to people today, just go look at these current eight teams that are playing in the playoffs right now. Find how many players below 6'5 are actually in the rotation. Yeah. You're going to find like Mike Conley, who is a big 6'3", a wiry 6'3". So that's just my take. So it could still go a lot of different ways. But I think that athleticism scores will be a differentiator for anybody that, and really I felt this way before Masai. Matt Riccardi and Finley have been doing a ton of scouting. Like these guys know what modern basketball is. I feel pretty positive about draft optionality right now.
Right. Now, Kirk, talk me out of this if you can, I guess, because one of the problems I'm having is, I guess one of the concerns I had with him is Masai, strikes me as a win now kind of guy. And I have no problem. I'd like to see the Mavs competitive next season, but one of the things I really struggle with, and it's one of the things I struggled with when we had Luka, is we never gave Luka a long enough runway, sure, you know? And you see some of these teams, the Thunder, they have a very long runway. The Spurs, you know, they have our pick. They have the Timberwolves picks. They have swaps in the 2030s. And, you know, so they've extended Wemby's, you know, runway. Even when they're going to be good, they're going to have other people's picks to rely on. Yep. You know, one of my concerns with, what's going to happen here, you know, knowing how hungry you are to win is, you know, just really focusing on that, where personally, I would like to see us, you know, I don't know, maybe trade some of these veterans, get some future first. I guess I'm just worried about, you know, us getting ourselves in the same situation where, you know, 3-4 years down the line, you end up like Giannis and the Bucks. You know, look at them now. They have no picks, no way to improve the roster. That project is over. So,
sure,
you know, I guess, is that something you kind of fear? Or would you also be in the mindset of, you know, balancing this thing? I want to see us compete, but I'd also like to see us, you know, flip guys for future first, really extend that runway if we could.
So the answer to your question comes in this form, where I think that the 2026-27 Mavericks, their goal will be to be competitive. Not good. If good is a byproduct of competitive, so be it. But I firmly believe with a GM like president of basketball operations like this, he comes in with a fresh take on everyone. Cooper Flagg was the highlight name, as it should be. Everything else is downhill. I don't think a single player should feel particularly comfortable about their future with the Mavericks, nor do I think a single player should fear their future with the Mavericks. I think that this guy in this front office will leave no stone unturned with how to improve this roster, but not at the sake of future flexibility. These teams at the top of the West, I mean, if you're watching the Spurs right now as they're just beating the shit out of Minnesota, the Spurs and Thunder are going nowhere. They are going nowhere. They are the rest of the decade's Western Conference top teams. That's not me being negative. It's just the way I see it. But then you get down from there. Denver, Los Angeles, Houston, Minnesota, Portland, Phoenix, Clippers, Golden State Warriors. I see no reason why next year's Dallas Mavericks cannot be a play-in or 5-6 seed adjacent team, regardless of who they draft, sign, or trade. This team is far away from title contention. They are not far away from competitive playoff contention.
Right. And that's kind of, I agree with you. And that's kind of the route I want to take is, you know, I'd like to make the play-in, but I really, for me, it's all for right now, after seeing what we witnessed with, you know, our war chest with Luka was over within the first, you know, 3-4 years of that project, of that runway, you know. And so I really want to see that replenished, but I also want to see, you know, Coop get a taste of it.
Sure.
You know, that's, well, I think
the really playoff important. Basketball is just so fucking different. It's so different. And we're watching it right now in real time. And I believe Cooper Flagg's game is built for playoff basketball.
Yeah. And I want to know, I saw Brian in the chat mention that, you know, a lot of these trades Masai made, you know, they were the direction of ownership. I think there is an element of that. I also read Jack's article. I think he was very fair, and I appreciated it. One of the things that really struck me to it, and another reason why I would like more draft picks, if we could flip some of these veterans for picks, is, you know, that seems to be Masai's strength. You know, this is a guy who came from a scouting background. Look at some of the guys he drafted in the late 20s, you know, so it's not going to take much. But at the same time, it's like, you know, his record with trades outside a couple home runs, you know, that's where it gets a little dicey. Now, I trust him more. I do think there was an element of, you know, Toronto's ownership meddling. I think that's probably true. But, you know, I guess we'll have to see. In the meantime, I mean, this is going to be a really fun offseason. I mean, we've got a $20 million trade exception, 3 draft picks, a lottery pick, you know, some cap space, not really cap space, but there's, you know, mid-level exception stuff.
Those exceptions are going to be valuable because I think they do something with, Chris Middleton that'll be interesting. I don't know what. But like Middleton can clearly play. He just shouldn't be playing for the Mavericks. And I'm cautiously to extraordinarily optimistic. I was so sick of the Donnie Nelson era Mavericks that I swallowed my feelings about Nico at the time. I basically, other than like, who the fuck is this guy? And you know, when they brought in Riccardi, and Riccardi like seems to be very well versed in the cap. Like, the Mavericks are sitting on a place where they went from having, like, kind of frightening financial decisions they were going to have to make, and then they traded Anthony Davis, and now they're not in a fantastic spot, but they're in a spot that allows them options, and that's really all I could ask for to a certain degree.
Yeah. I will say, one of my expectations for this offseason, and I hope it happens, is I would actually like us to be, you know, a cap room team even going into the season somehow, if we can, you know, trade some guys, get off salary. You know, I think an easy way for us to acquire draft assets is taking on bad contracts, you know, and this is something Masai has shown a willingness to do. I remember he was in Toronto. He got, I think 1 second-rounder, 2 second-rounder, and Davion Mitchell, you know, helping the Kings facilitate a deal or duck under the tax, I forget. So
yep.
I would like to see that. But anyways, I know there's other people.
No, you're good.
I want to let them have their shot. But yeah, Kirk, please, if you can, man, you know, do more of these, because I know my friends are very casual Mavs fans. So when I talk about, you know, when I get into
it's painful.
Yeah,
it's painful because they're just like, oh, you know, most Mavs fans watch about 20 games a year.
Yeah. But really quickly, really quickly, can you tell me your top? I mean, where, for, let's say I want to give, like, give you, let me give you this hypothetical. The Mavs pick at 8. who are the top four guys in order, if you could, that you would like to see at that spot just before the lottery, so I can kind of compare it to what I have. The top four guys that you think you'd
like. It's very important here to understand that I don't know shit. I just, okay, so it's like I am not incredibly well versed. I am obsessed with Wagler at this point because I don't think we have any idea what kind of player this guy could be. Just obsessed with him. After that, I think Mikel Brown Jr. He was given a clean bill of health. I think he was ready to be done with his college experience. Neither here nor there. Followed by Kingston, followed by Berries. Berries is my least favorite, largely because he's 21. I have a child in developmental basketball. He's 10. But double reclassifications, which is what Berries was, and I know there's extenuating circumstances. Berries is one of the few guys where double reclass didn't hurt him because he's still going to make the NBA. And what a double reclass means is, like, this dude was damn near 20 years old when he went to college. Like, that's fucking weird. Sorry.
Yeah. so that's very close to mine. I would say I kind of have Mikel and Wagler like 1A, 1B. Yeah, I'm a really big fan of Mikel Brown. I really want the high upside swing, but I would say it's Mikel, you know, Wagler.
Look, man, Brown is very exciting because I don't want Cooper Flagg taking a ton of threes, and Brown will take a ton of threes.
Yeah,
a ton of threes.
Yeah. But I'm also a Burry's guy just because I feel like
he's good, man.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, every championship team I've ever watched has like a Braden Burry's, has their Derek White, has their do-it-all Swiss Army knife.
I don't know if he's big enough for this, but this is what Chris Middleton was.
Exactly.
Like the second tier, the second level star guy who's able to do, and like, who knows what he could become, but he's very good. He's very good.
And we need that. You know, what every elite team we're watching right now has too is an elite point of attack defender. Like, I mean, that's not Burry's right now, but I think that's what he could be. You know, sure. He's at least the best defender, but all right, I'll leave it there.
Cliff, right, man, you're great.
And appreciate it.
Thanks for hanging out. All right. Yep. I'm going to insert some ads here. Thanks so much for hanging out with me. I'm going to try to do a Monday, Wednesday cadence. My son practices basketball on these days. So it just makes sense. I come home and podcast. I don't talk to my wife. So the three ways to this, that you can support the show are listen to our ads. I hope they're good. Second way, tell your friends. Third way, couple of links if you want to throw some dollars, subscribe to the show. That sort of thing is very important to us. We'll be right back after this ad insertion. Thanks so much, guys. Okay, again, we're going to do a special show tomorrow, a pre-lottery, probably chalk, so whatever the order is right now before the lottery, draft. We're going to have as many Mavs Moneyball people that feel like joining us tomorrow night. We're going to assign spots, and we're just going to go pick after pick after pick. Probably, you know, it'll be longer than it ought to be, but that's the best part about mock drafts. It's just a good time. So join us tomorrow night for that. You can watch, listen, and that'll be in your feed by Friday morning. I really like this comment from Jamie Cardona because I heard this too, and I wanted to talk about it real quick before I go to Kill a Cam. Apparently, Cooper's mom really likes kids, so he has some security there unless they think they can upset Coop. I heard through my sources, multiple sources, the people that know things in my universe says that she doesn't want Cooper to have multiple coaches in his first 2 years. Brian Windhorst fingers. Kid got to her. Kid got to her. That's my take. All right, coming up next, friend of the show and friend to all, Kill a Cam. What's up, brother?
What's up, bro?
I'm glad that people waited through my technical difficulties. That was physically painful to me. Thanks for hanging out. What's going on?
Is there, remember, good, man. Like, I'm excited, you know. Like, in the beginning, I was kind of worried. Kind of excited but worried at the same time, but I'm liking my side move more and more and more. And also, when you find out, like, you know, there were some pressure moves after the championship, man, but once you kind of hear report stars, I was like, there was ownership kind of meddling and like keeping OG and Siakam longer than they should have.
Oh, up in Toronto? Yeah.
Because the owner wanted, so So that's when I'm like looking at this for like, Benny, I was kind of skeptical, but now I'm kind of looking at him as a more and more clean slate because like he'll have more power because like, because honestly, you do kind of get it though why he like, so we don't even know if he wanted to move off when everyone else wanted to or was it ownership, you know? So I'm looking at this as a more of a clean slate, you know. The Scotty move was good, but also kind of finding out he wanted Malawach over CMB kind of.
CMB, and I love Malawach because I'm kind of obsessed with that dude, what that dude could become at some point.
Yeah, but CMB looks, I mean, he had a crazy rookie year. So I was like, it depends. Like, you know, if Malawach turned out to be, both turned out to be good players, I guess that, well, to be fair, honestly, like, looking back at it, they probably should have dropped him out of watch because Poeltl is just cooked.
And somebody in the comments pointed out that Jerry might have been involved in that extension, which if that's the case, they have some brutal extensions. Now,
yeah, before we don't know if that was Masai or was like we just don't know. So I'm just gonna give him a clean slate to just. Because we don't know who was involved in the later years.
Yes. Well, if I were to put on my Brian Windhorst negativity cap here, I would say that if I were to question Ujiri's team building chops, it's the kind of team that he builds. Watching how they play basketball is physically repulsive to me. I hate the Raptors, and
I just kind of like Raptors. Especially Scotty.
See, you're a ball knower. You like sick shit. I just want to see.
Yeah, I mean, I'm loving the Detroit right now. So I was like, I'm just kind of like that greedy guy. But I still need more shooting. So like, and I do like that he said that, and also I just love that he immediately called out our former medical staff. Like he was like, yeah, the first thing he brought up was like, we are definitely going to bring
a poor woman who's in charge of the training staff. I cannot remember her name, but I will never forget her face because there was gosh darn it, who was our Australian point guard who was out all year?
Exum.
So there was a segment on a mat, like obviously a pre-planned segment. And I remember Jeff Skinwade talking about how awesome a job she did as Exum got hurt on the live broadcast. And it will just never leave my brain because I don't know enough about medical stuff other than to say that like they've been bad at it. That's fair. And obviously for him to talk about it makes me feel better because sometimes people just chalk up injuries as well, not much you can do. And I personally don't believe that. And so for him to address it head on actually makes me feel better.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, and kind of going off of like a Maz big board to where, and also I really want to keep Ricardo as well. Like I really like his scouting. So hopefully they just make Riccardi a GM and then Finley like head of player development or something like that, you know. So, but for the Mass Pacific billboard with like Messiah's kind of archetype in mind, like AJ is definitely number one overall, and he's definitely number one. It's a toss up between Caleb and The Candace point guard, I've got his name.
Peterson.
Yeah, it's tussled between them two out of like two and three, and then Boozer's definitely like four. Like Boozer, I feel like he may. He'll have Boozer four.
We had an absolute Mavs Moneyball war over Boozer today, where I was just like, in absolutely no circumstances would I draft him.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm just not really big on the archetype of an offensive-minded big who's better on defense in the playoffs. Like, the offense has to, like, be so much good, so much better to offset the defensive liabilities that is, like, if I had a choice, I'd rather he's number four in my top four, you know. So I would take all the top three guys above him, you know. So, but if he's at four, if he's still there, I would gladly take him. But like for Matt, I just don't trust that archetype in the playoffs, you know.
I don't either. And one of the things that I have these discussions about with people where I get very persnickety is the acknowledgement of playoff basketball being a different kind of game than what we see in the regular season.
Yeah.
And weaknesses just get so ruthlessly hunted. Ruthless. And I don't want to be like the beggars can't be choosers thing, because the Mavericks obviously just need talent, but it's so difficult to be like, oh, I'm really into a guy who I think could get exposed.
Yeah. Yeah. And for Burries, I would have found Bailon over Burries just because I just don't have the ceiling, you know. Like, I think he'll be a nice floor player, but since this is probably going to be the last time for a while, we're gonna be in a lottery, I kind of want to take a swing on someone with like higher upside, you know. Sure. So, like, to rank them to after the top four, I'll probably say like. Wagler 5, a healthy Mikal 6, 7, I'll probably have Kingston, 8, I'll have Phylon, and then 9, I'll have Burries, and then 8, I'll have 10. Like, I'm just don't. Like, that archetype again for the playoffs, like a small guard. I just don't really like that because so good offensively to offset their defensive liabilities.
One of the things that I think is important in discussing this, as we're, you know, just spitballing, is what role you see Cooper Flagg fulfilling.
I see him as a secondary ball handler.
Secondary ball handler and play finisher.
Yeah.
Right. There's the argument out there that he needs to be Giannis, that he needs to be a 30% usage guy. And I want Cooper Flagg to influence both ends of the ball. And I just don't think if you're 6'9", you can be that guy at a 30% usage rate.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the same. Like, for like, offensively, Akoff would be great, but just defensively, I just like, and also because, like, I don't know if they'll ever be, like, a Brunson-level offensive player. So, and to do so, since I don't see that, man, I just don't see him being a starter
right
in the playoffs for actual, like, if there may be, like, a Lansani run, like what Trae Young had, you know, where – where they would have made it to the conference finals, but outside of like 1 year of a conference finals as him as your starting point guard, I just don't see it with him. You know, like I see it with him in the playoffs, but for the regular season, he'll be absolutely awesome in the regular season, you know. So, but for Koopman, I do see him as like a ball handler. Like, would you categorize a ball handler and a playmaker, like, separately, or would you kind of categorize that as the same?
Ooh, okay.
Because I'll see Coop as a secondary playmaker.
Yes, and I to me, it's sort of it becomes an, you know, we had two point guards this year who had very different skill sets in Williams and Nembhard.
Yeah,
and neither one was able to. You know, Williams, for example, could get to the basket, but if he was getting to the basket, he couldn't pass, and he certainly couldn't fucking shoot. And Nembhard could pass, but he had three games all year where he was able to hit a shot.
Yeah.
And so, to me, like, the ability of, like, a playmaker is, like, somebody who can do all three at, like, a reasonable level.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm hunting for.
And Jamie in the chat, like, he, like, AJ and Coop are Masai's like dreams. So, like, even though AJ that'd be kind of a hard fit, like, Masai will make it work because he would literally quit before he passes out on those two, because those two are his dream archetype. So,
right,
you know. So, but and then with Kid as well, like, I mean, Kid's from like from the 80s Oakland, you know what I'm saying? So, like, so he has a little like screw looses, you know what I'm saying? So, but like, he is a great chess master, because like the owner likes him, The franchise player likes him.
The owner likes him and likes him, but doesn't like him enough to loop him in on his decision making, which is fascinating part of this.
When he shouldn't, though, because like
sure, but I mean, the kid that I'm familiar with is quite good at positioning himself in where the levers of power are, and for him to not know about this is interesting.
Yeah, but like it's gonna be kind of hard because I do think he'll be the coach this year because the players like him, the ownership likes him, so he'll get a shot. But like to your point, I wouldn't be shocked if maybe next year or the year after he maybe leaves for another job. You know, he may leave. You know, if New York doesn't win this year, they'll probably give Mike Brown one more shot. But if New York doesn't win either this year or next year, they're probably gonna fire Mike Brown. So he may in like 2 years try to angle for the next job. So saying that, would you just? I mean, I kind of like kid, but I also don't really care if he gets fired. So, but like, is Sandy Sweeney like the Sweeney guy? Like, I understand people like him, but I also kind of feel like he may be a little bit kind of like treated like the golden child, maybe, if that's kind of the right word. You know, like I just don't. But maybe that's you because you kind of know more about that coaching side than I do. So, would you fire kid for Sweeney?
I would fire kid because I believe he's always looking at the next thing. That is why I would fire kid. Yeah. There's always an eye on something that's not related to the Dallas Mavericks winning a championship. He might get mad at me if he ever heard me say that, but I'm sorry. You know, I had somebody with the Mavs tell me, well, the reason he got those extensions is because he had leverage. He didn't have any fucking leverage. He's under contract. He put his name out there because he was interested in securing either that job or another year of money. And like at a certain point, you do it once. Okay, fine. You do it twice. You're not married to this organization. He's not. So that part's a different element of what you're asking. It's just like for me, I don't want to have to talk about Jason Kidd like this. I want my coach to be part of the solution, not a question. That's all.
Yeah. Like, but either way, like whatever happens, I hope we keep Bill handy. Because I do like him for like player development.
I think he's attached to Kyrie.
Yeah. Hopefully, if Kid leaves or goes, he stays. And as long as he stays, I'm cool with whatever. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, man, it's exciting time. You know, exciting time. Hopefully, we get a good ping pong ball bouncing twice. You know. So hopefully.
Sorry, I was just watching my one of my friends, Sam Esfandiari, get yelled at by Austin Rivers. That distracted me very wholly for a minute. But hey, man, I'm glad you came on. Glad as always. If you want to pop in tomorrow night and listen to us do the live draft, otherwise, I'll hopefully see you next Wednesday. Okay.
Sure. Ooh.
All right. Talk soon.
Thank you.
All right, Karam, you came back. Thanks for waiting. I don't know what in the world was happening with my thing earlier. What's going on?
Well, first, thanks for waiting. I'm XX Deus, so.
Oh, in the chat there? Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Everybody has 19 different usernames. Throws me off.
Yeah. Well, first, you said something about Jeff Skin Wade, and can I share a little story?
Sure.
So a long time ago, I don't know when. I try to go back and find it on my Twitter, but I think he deleted it. So I was responding to an old tweet of his back then. It was about like KP, and you know how Jeff is. He's very optimistic, very team-oriented.
Yeah, sure.
Kind of not really objective, very, you know, homer, which is fine, right?
But literal, I mean, he's a team employee.
Yeah. Yeah.
As one of his many jobs.
And so one time I messaged him and I said in my tweet, I really dislike this guy because of his homerism. He attacked me And then he got Ben Rogers to respond to me. And what's funny is because you mentioned him, excuse me, you're one of the people who actually defended me in that tweet many years ago. And that's when I first heard about you and what you and Josh do on the YouTube.
Yes, sir.
So I just, it was memory lane. He has me blocked still, which is funny. So, but back to on topic. I'm really happy with us getting Messiah. I've always liked him when he was with Denver. When he was forced to trade Melo, he got a pretty good haul. I believe that they had a winning season for a few years when he was there. And I think if I remember correctly, he had what, like 4 first round picks for that trade?
I don't remember.
I like what he did with Toronto. I love the players he drafted. I think Scotty Barnes is one of them. I love Scotty Barnes.
No, he was considered a reach at the time. Probably one of his last great moves with that organization.
Very well spoken, really good aura. I liked how he had a lot of self-awareness that our past GM did not have. I liked his saying of, you know, we in Africa, we have kings go come and they go. Luca was a king. He's gone. Now we have a prince who we are going to make a king, right? So I really like that. But you said something a while back with Josh about how after he won a championship, he didn't really do much afterwards, right? With Toronto, if I'm correct with what you said.
I mean, they didn't have a lot of, they had very little success. So yeah.
Right. Fair. And then that, I think for me, that worries me because we kind of saw that same thing play out with Donnie Nelson when we won the championship in 2011.
Very different deal. Donnie Nelson is a very important person to NBA basketball history. He is also, by the end of his tenure, was kind of so disinterested in his job because he has lots of irons and various fires, and I don't want to say anything stupid that'll like get me in trouble. But I think it's fair to say for anyone who paid attention that like the Dallas Mavericks were not his number one job, which is why Mark Cuban turned his basketball interested ear to Haralabob Vulgaris. So that's kind of why that happened. Masai is a basketball lifer. There is enough out there to make the argument that he was not allowed to do certain things to break the team down because the ownership group was interested in that playoff revenue. Making the playoffs in the East is just not a hard proposition. It's just not. It's a terrible conference. All the teams suck. It's like, look at the Raptors this year. They sucked and they still drove their first round opponent to a second seed. So I think he's talented is the answer to this. Whether he sees basketball in the way that a championship team can be built with how it's played now, up in the air. But the Toronto Raptors did kick off this cycle where no team has won back-to-back since they won, following the Warriors winning twice in a row. Like there's some there in terms of how you build teams with what he wants to do. I think the answer is really cautious optimism.
So I know a while back you also talked about how you wanted, you know, a GM to be a Maverick, like someone from Dallas or someone who has.
No, I wanted it to be someone who was a basketball lifer and who was hungry to prove themselves. And I that's why I wasn't initially high on this job because he's been to the mountaintop. that said, that I approved of his press conference enough to where I'm like, okay, I'm more than willing to give this a shot.
Okay. Yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited because I feel like this is kind of closing that chapter of Luka, right? In a way. But you can't really say it's fully closed until Kid is gone. But I mean, from what you've said and from what I've heard, Cooper really likes him. So I don't know if you want to jeopardize.
You can't worry.
Unhappy second year into.
You can't worry about that sort of thing when Cooper is essentially in year two of a 8-year contract. I'm not worried about Cooper's opinion right now. You have to do what's best for the organization, and that's the thing that I'm very confident that Masai Ujiri will do.
You think he will get rid of Finley?
That's a tougher one. Finley or Riccardi, I think they it's up in the air. If they both are interested in staying, I'm sure there will be a role. There's only so many jobs available in the NBA. Yeah. You don't walk away from that sort of shit.
No, true.
I mean, that's why they both didn't protest. If they knew about the Luka trade, that's why neither of them were able to, like, were willing to stick their necks in the line for it. There's only so many jobs. I mean, you and I might not like that, but that's just kind of the truth.
Yeah. Now, my last question, because I know we have, I think, two more people. Two things. They're kind of like double.
Sure.
They're the same thing, but I guess different. Who do you think, or in your opinion, how do you think he will approach free agency?
So free agency simply doesn't matter like it used to.
It doesn't, no.
So they have assets available to them to use, and it's just down my priority list. I really hope that they trade the guys who are not, let's just say 27 to 30, who aren't going to be on the team regardless when Cooper's in his prime. So that's what I hope he does.
Okay. And then this is the part that kind of fits everything.
Sure.
But where do you think we will land on Sunday?
I think we bump back to 9. That's my guess.
And is there anyone in 9 that you like?
I think they take the best available out of the list of guards that we kind of threw out there.
Do we also have another number one pick? I thought I heard like a 20.
The very last pick in the first round that's Oklahoma City's this year, which is a fantastic pick for the kind of team Dallas is right now. Most teams that pick in the bottom.
So do we get that pick or does it go to Oklahoma?
No, it's Oklahoma's coming to us.
Got it.
So the reason I think this pick is so fascinating is when you get a first round pick, you sign a player to a potential 4-year contract. So 3 years with the last two being player options.
Yeah.
Most teams that are picking, 22 to 30 are playoff teams. And like the Thunder, for example, picked a guy last year who he was either hurt already or got hurt immediately and they could just stash him because they don't need him. So sometimes guys, you see these guys that are picked in the later part of the first round that have potential, but their team doesn't need them right now, which means the Mavericks. So like, remember when the Mavericks drafted Jalen Brunson, he was a national player of the year, but he went 34. He went in the second round.
Yeah.
There's going to be guys there in that 30th pick that are really, really good.
Yeah.
Now they might not have an incredibly high ceiling, but that's fine. You just need guys who can play.
Yeah, and he's good, and I know Masai is good at picking picks in, like, the late first round, second round. I mean, I think he had Norman Powell, Jamal Murray was a late second, Jamal Murray was a late first round pick. There's others that I can't think of from the top of my mind, but yeah, I'm excited.
Good. You should positive be.
Optimism, I guess, is what I'm looking for. But I think we'll really know more about what his mindset is during free agency.
Sure.
Oh, last thing. Do you think he will trade the first round pick?
No.
Really?
Well, here's my caveat. I think if the Mavericks were to jump into the top four, you have to discuss it. I don't know if they do it. I don't know if they move. But given the lack of Mavericks draft options, between meaning they don't have control of their pick until 2031, I think that accumulating assets has to be of interest for this team.
So it would have to be at least top four.
Yeah, and you know, you would maybe like, and again, I'm just talking out of my ass here, but
oh yeah,
you get the third pick and somebody is really high on Boozer, and then you trade from third to sixth and pick up something else. I don't know. But okay. You know, I think that's very unlikely because it's like it's trading out of a lucky position.
Yeah. Well, fingers crossed for Sunday.
That's right. That's right. We'll go live on here if I can, Sunday afternoon. We'll see. So, we're going to podcast tomorrow night. If you want to hang out and watch our mock draft and then podcast on Sunday.
What time?
I would guess 8 to 8:30 Central time tomorrow night.
I will do my very best.
It'll be on the podcast feed.
If not, you have my energy, positive
that's
energy.
That's right. Appreciate it. All right.
Thank you for everything. Have a good one.
Have a good rest of the week. All right, guys, it's been fun. Thank you for dealing with my technical difficulties. Hopefully I can edit them out of the actual podcast that's going up. Everybody be good. Enjoy the playoffs. We'll talk soon. Go Mavs.